From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 13th day of May, 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at ADM Grain Group. That's in Decatur, Illinois. In agricultural news, the newly introduced climate change bill has a circuit breaker provision that to prevent too much farmland from becoming forest land. Europe has been criticized for an agricultural policy that limits productivity and instead looks outside its borders for land to develop. And a K-State ag economist is predicting the use of DDGs for feed will increase 23% in the next 5 years. Dave Dickey will be here with the details. In the second half hour of our program today, on many of these stations and always online at willag.org, we'll take up an issue at hand this week in the commodity markets, the export of corn to China. I spoke with the president and CEO of the U.S. Grains Council early this morning about the developing story. And at the end of this half hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. Futures finished the day like this. The nearby contract in the May soft red winter wheat down 11 and 3 quarters. The settlement price today at $4.71. July at $4.79, down 12 and a half. And September at $4.96, down 12 and a half cents. July Kansas City wheat at $4.96 and 3 quarters, down 10 and 1 quarter. May corn futures $3.66 and a half, 5 and a quarter lower. July at 373, down 5 and a quarter, and September corn at 379 and 3 quarters, 4 and a half cents lower. December contract, the harvest month, at 389, down 3 and a half, and the March futures for next year at 401 and a quarter, down 3 cents. May beans, 960 and a half, up a penny. July, down a penny, 964 and a half. August at 958 and a half, up 1 and 3 quarters. November beans at 935 and a quarter, down 2 and a quarter. May bean meal, 284.40, up 310. May bean oil at 37.80, down 36. The other one was the meal, of course, at 284.40, up 310. June live cattle futures at 95.57.5, down 12.5 cents. May feeders at 111.72.5, up 22.5. And the lean hogs, 2.5 cents lower at 88.42.5. You are listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil, June contract, $74.26 a barrel, down $1.38. The June ethanol at $1.64 and 3 cents, unchanged. Natural gas at $4.33, up 4 and 6 cents. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.13 and 3 cents, down 2 and 6 cents. Gold futures at $1,228.80. Down $13.90 on the day. Dow Jones Industrial Average now at 10,859, about 38 points lower for the afternoon. And Goldman Sachs at 519.09 is down 1.86 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like at this hour. Widespread moderate flooding has been reported in western and northern Illinois and portions of northern Missouri and eastern Iowa, where some rain totals exceeded 4 inches. Rain will continue to expand the flood situation before drier air spreads from the northwest tomorrow and Saturday. A disturbance will move from the southern plains towards the Great Lakes on Sunday, and it'll bring scattered showers to the area and delay any return, of course, to planting of soybeans for several days. Beyond Monday of next week, the forecast appears drier, a bit warmer for the entire two-state area. And that will bring about some improving growth and crop development. We'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour. And we talk with Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist here on the Closing Market Report. You can always hear us online if you'd like at willag.org. We post everything within about a half hour of the time we air it for the first time on the radio stations. So visit willag.org if you miss us, and you can always pick us up any time of day or night.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. Time to check in on the agricultural futures markets. Along the line with us is Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
Well, they keep talking about China and exports to that marketplace. Maybe 16 million bushels at this point. Upwards of 30 million if the United States Grains Council is correct, but it really didn't have much of an effect in Chicago, at least today. Has it been built into the marketplace already?
Well, I think the first round of rumors and purchases probably has, and I think the market has probably grown a little tired of hearing it and not really getting a real big sale out of all the rumors and whatnot. I think that probably was a key factor in the market kind of falling down here today. Also, I mean, when you look at weather conditions, you probably got the best start, and I don't know since when, crop prospects. So that also weighs on the market.
And when you take a look then at the technical side of the marketplace, we've been moving upwards. Many a farmer have called and asked why is that the case, but generally a move upward at this time of the year is not unusual. In fact, it's the most common time, I suppose, seasonally, for the marketplace to go upward. Have we moved higher than normal seasonal trends would be the expectation?
Well, not really. I mean, we've been basically counter-seasonal since the January crop report. We did, during the month of February, the market did catch around a seasonal strength because Feb is kind of a sideways to higher month, and you did see that take hold. But then it failed. It failed early March. Then we started going counter-seasonal until we kind of found kind of a late April low in here. Normally, I would say if you were on track of being seasonal, you would kind of work your way into a mid to late April high, and then once the crop is planted, then the market has a tendency to turn down. But this is the case. We've somewhat gone, like I said, counter-seasonal all the way into a late April. Now, there is a little bubble up of seasonality in here. That kind of takes hold during May a little bit. That could continue as you go on into June, and that a lot of that strength, you know, depends upon what crop prospects are and that kind of thing. And when you have favorable crop prospects, favorable weather, it's tough to get a lot going on the upside. But what we're seeing here is, I mean, farmers have been busy in the field. We did have seen a big pickup in export demand over the past 30 to 60 days. So that minimized country movement into the pipeline, and that kind of helped firm this market into a little sideways to higher trend in here.
Where do we go from here?
Well, I think the jury is still somewhat out. I mean, for the most part, we're range-bound. Now, yesterday's action was a little disappointing. It did look like the market was on the verge of breaking out to the upside for maybe a 10 to 15 cent bounce. We came back and kind of erased most of yesterday's advance, and now today we kind of lost upwards of 3 to 5 cents, depending upon which contract. But overall, I think the underlying structure is still sideways, consolidation, waiting on something to send it on higher or just roll it on down on ideas that the crop is getting bigger.
Okay, so consolidation, we use that word from time to time. It just means it's relatively going sideways and building a base. But as you suggested, there's potential off of that to go either direction. If you had their druthers, and not your druthers, but if you had to guess, which way will it go?
Well, I guess if I would just lean on my technicals, my interpretation of the chart pattern and looking at some things, I'm inclined to kind of be somewhat neutral to positive in here, not a super bull by no means, but it would not surprise me to see this thing try to strengthen yet as we go into the end of May.
Yeah, so given good crop conditions growing between now and the end of May, which looks like that's going to be the case, what has to happen in order for the trend to move friendly at least?
Well, the crop conditions ain't necessarily perfect all over. We are getting some areas here that we could see some planting delays. We could see some corn acres switch to soybeans, so that could come into factor here. But my guess is what the market really needs at this point is more confirmation of China demand. I think would really light the fire underneath this market. The other thing is, as we keep hearing that maybe June is the month that EPA may give us a 12% blend or a 15% blend. So when you look at the calendar, June's not that far away. So I think any kind of sniffing out, the market would begin to smell that USDA is going to increase the blend rate or allow a higher blend rate. I think that could kind of spark the market on higher. You can see USDA's balance sheet yesterday or earlier this week. We did take 160 million bushels out of the carryout, and so overall supplies are not as heavy as what the market was thinking here 30 or 60 days ago.
Let's talk a bit more about China. About, what, 8 million confirmed at this point, at least, are on the idea that there's books that they booked that. On a cargo, that's generally about 2 million bushel. There's thoughts that there's another 7 million out there and available. You think there'll be more past that? And have you heard that there might be? And if so, what are the reasons behind the purchase?
Well, I think everybody's still trying to sort it out. It does smell that the China crop last year is much smaller than what's on the books. Granted that USDA did, have China crop pretty good size here earlier this week. I think there's suspicion that that number isn't necessarily correct. If they're in here sniffing around, kicking the tires for some corn. So we really don't know what extent China demand is going to be. I don't think we've really seen the hand totally played out. But as long as there continued talk of it, that will provide underlying strength to the market. And that will bring in speculative interest, betting that further demand will unfold over time.
Is your opinion that the Chinese crop last fall was smaller than expected, or is it that usage in China is larger than expected, or a combination of the two?
Well, whatever the case is, they have fairly rapid food inflation. And the only way to really resolve that issue is increasing the supply of food to slow down the price rises. So it could be a combination of both. I don't know. I don't think anybody really knows what size of crop China really produced. USDA gives us a number, but I'm not too sure they're real comfortable with that number. So it probably smells of more of a little smaller crop, and I think it also implies that their economy is purring along very fast, and that's why they're concerned about hyperinflation, and they may have to slow down their economy.
We've talked an awful lot about corn. You want to take up wheat or soybeans?
Soybeans or wheat. I mean, wheat is basically coming under seasonal pressure. I mean, when you look at seasonal tendencies, basically from mid-May on into first part of July is very, very strong downdraft. We are seeing wheat harvest in southern Texas. Our Corpus facility has been taking in some wheat this week, so wheat harvest has officially begun. Now, it's going to take a while before it moves on up into Oklahoma and Kansas, but seasonally it's real difficult to get wheat to do anything but go down here. And then when you look at the supply-demand tables, it's kind of hard to see anything. So when I look at the chart, I'd say probably the best thing that we could probably see in wheat at the moment, especially on this soft red winter, which we're more interested here in the Midwest, is more of a sideways type situation, because we don't have a big soft red winter wheat crop to see a lot of hedge pressure. We got a lot of inventory around, but that's already hedged into the market, so that's priced in. So we're not going to see a lot of hedge pressure, so that soft red winter wheat crop or a contract could spend an awful lot of time going sideways from here forward.
Thanks so much for joining us today.
Very well.
That's Dan Zwicker. He's with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Thursday afternoon. If you'd like to hear what Dan had to say again, you can always do that online at willag.org. That's willag.org. We post our programming, well, within about a half hour.
Agricultural programs are made possible by... Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Baisdefer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Coming up in just a moment, we'll hear from Dave Dickey. He's your Director of Agricultural Programming at Illinois Public Media and has a complete look at all the details in the agricultural news for the afternoon.
In agricultural news, a Senate climate bill introduced yesterday has a circuit breaker provision to help prevent an acreage shift to forestry that would hurt the nation's food supply or drive up commodity prices. The language was added to the bill after complaints over the past year that landowners would convert millions of acres to collect carbon offsets rather than continue growing crops or raising livestock on the land. The Kerry-Lieberman bill would require the Agriculture Secretary to conduct periodic analysis of land removed from crop production or grazing for afforestation projects to study the impact on food, feed, commodity prices, livestock prices, food prices, and the environment. The Agriculture Secretary would be able to restrict the amount of acres or quality farm ground from converting to forestry for carbon offset if such an acreage shift causes, quote, serious adverse effects on United States agriculture or the public interest. A new study of European Union agricultural trade is criticizing the bloc's limited investment in agricultural productivity. It identifies what it calls growing concerns in terms of the effects on developing countries. It labels the developments it defines as virtual land grabbing from poor countries. The analysis covers trade flows in 40 crops and 240 tradable commodity groups. It concludes that in 2007-2008, the European Union was a net importer of 86.5 million acres of land from outside Europe. A Kansas State University agricultural economist says feed use of distillers' dried grains with solubles will increase by 23% by the 2015-16 crop year, and feed corn use will drop 6%. Daniel O'Brien says feeders will continue to use roughly five times the amount of corn than distillers' grains, but virtually all of the DDGs made during ethanol fuel production will be consumed by animals in the U.S. and elsewhere. Wendy's Arby's Group today says it lost money in its first quarter. The owner of Wendy's and Arby's restaurants reported a loss of $3.4 million, or a penny per share, for the 3 months ending April 4th. That compares with a loss of $10.9 million, or 2 cents per share last year. Revenue fell 3% to $837.4 million. And French analyst Strategic Grains today says it has cut its monthly estimate for the European Union's 2010 soft wheat crop by 1.2 million tons to 133 million, mainly to reflect unfavorable weather in the western part of the bloc. Strategic Grains slightly raised its estimate for this year's European corn crop to 58.5 million tons from 58.3 million forecast in April and 57.2 million harvested last year. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of this program, The Closing Mark Report and The Farming World. It's the second part of The Closing Mark Report on many of these radio stations. Today, we'll talk with the president and CEO of the U.S. Grains Council. His name is Tom Doerr. I spoke to him this morning about the import of corn into China from the United States. It's a good program. Stay with us if you can, or visit willag.org and listen to it under the Closing Market Report category. Now, up next, you know, the FarmDoc team here at the University of Illinois has been calculating the expected acre payments for farmers in the state. I'll have more on how the revenue insurance program looks to pay out for the 2009 cropping year. ACRE is the new revenue insurance program written into the last farm bill. It's supposed to smooth out farm revenue. The 2009 crop was the first year of the program's availability, and if it pays out, those dollars won't be fully calculated or released until later this year. Farm management specialist at the University of Illinois, Gary Schnitke, has done some pre-calculating to the estimated payouts.
Yep, state ACRE payments, and this would be for 2009 or the production that happened last year and will receive payments in October. $90 for wheat, and what we had was a very high guarantee because wheat prices were very high in 2007 and 2008. So wheat payments were $90. Corn is estimated at $27 and soybeans at $0 an acre.
Those, of course, are the numbers for last year's crop. Schnitke also put some values on the acre program for the crops to be harvested this season.
2010, we're coming in with an expected state acre payment of $41 an acre and estimate that payments will happen, about a 50% chance of payments happening. So, you know, looking at a lot of different price and yield scenarios, $41 for corn, $14 for soybeans, and we'd estimate about a 1 in 3 chance of soybeans getting a payment, and a $33 payment for wheat. And a 66%, or 2 out of 3 years, we'd expect payments on wheat. And the wheat payment, if anything, I think we're a little bit cautious or on that wheat payment. But pretty high chances of wheat payment again in 2010.
What it boils down to, says Schnitke, is that for those that have already signed up for the program and those making the decision to enter the ACRE program for the first time this season, it will probably pay for itself. Signing up for ACRE requires a producer to forego a portion of the direct payment issued by the U.S. government. You are listening to The Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. In just 2 minutes, I'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Pete Levin about the weather forecast. And then in the second half hour of our program, we call that The Farming World, and it shows up on many of these stations and online at willag.org. We'll talk with Tom Doerr. He's the president and CEO of the U.S. Grains Council. Our discussion point today, just one thing, the export of corn to China.
Support for WILL comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks by developing dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is at stuart-peterson.com.
This is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. In business news, the Labor Department today says that U.S. import prices rose a touch more than expected in April as petroleum prices surged. Import prices increased 0.9% after rising a revised 0.5% in March. In the 12 months to April, import prices increased by 11.1%. Walmart plans to significantly ramp up its donations to the nation's food banks to $2 billion over the next 5 years. The retail giant's announcement comes as 1 in 8 Americans are receiving food stamps and food banks are straining to meet demand. Walmart's plan comes in two parts. At least $250 million in grants over 5 years will go to efforts like buying refrigerated trucks to aid distribution. The bulk of the donations will consist of more than 1.1 billion pounds of food to food banks. That equals about 1 billion meals. Kohl's Corporation says its first quarter net income rose 45% as shoppers spent more at its stores. It is also raising its full-year guidance. Net income rose to $199 million, or 64 cents per share, in the 3 months that ended May 1st. Revenue rose 11% to $4.04 billion. And Realty Track today says that the number of households facing foreclosure in April fell 2% from a year ago, the first annual decline in 5 years. And that's a look at today's business news.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason on a Thursday afternoon. Pete Labatt joins us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, there's been rainfall, and there was a heck of a fun storm that zipped across a portion of Illinois this morning. And I say zipped, it was moving, I think, at about 70 miles an hour. And that's an actual 70 miles an hour. It was kind of a fun one to watch on the radar, I suppose, but not if you were underneath it. What kind of weather do we have in store for us yet this week?
Well, most of the activity I think we're going to see today, tonight, there's this first line of thunderstorms you mentioned whipped on through and into Indiana and Ohio. However, the front remains back in eastern Iowa, and it's coming along a little bit more slowly. And we'll allow some warmer air and some sunshine, as you have now, to get up there and heat things up a bit ahead of that front. So that front will probably generate some showers and thunderstorms and fast-moving ones at that as well. This evening and tonight should get across western Illinois around 9 or 10 p.m., go through the Champaign area around midnight. So don't be surprised if there's some showers and thunderstorms at that time. As far as the risk of severe thunderstorms are concerned, well, they were initially, this northern half of Illinois was initially in an area of some slight chance of severe weather, but I think that's going to depend this afternoon on how well this moisture gets back in ahead of the front. I'd give it about a 1 out of 3 chance or less than that. I think the front's coming too fast and most of the action will be further east. Looking on ahead, it's going to be a coolish week with some more activity developing in the central plains and moving eastward, mostly to the south of the state. But there will be showers up in there, especially the southern half of the state, on Saturday, Sunday, and maybe even into Monday. Northern half will see just variable cloudiness. The most likely day for showers looks like it'll be late Sunday and early Monday. And then when that clears out, we'll finally warm up the early part of next week.
That's a lot of action. Can you summarize it maybe in amounts of rainfall for Illinois, Indiana, Iowa over the week?
Yeah, it's not a lot up north. I know they're concerned about the flooding in the northwest, and I think I'd look at less than an inch with the speed of these storms in the northwest, and down south, maybe 1 to 3 inches south of I-70, north of there, a quarter to three-quarters of an inch in some locally heavier amounts, but I don't see the flooding stuff.
All right, take a look at the rest of the world. How's China doing?
China's doing pretty well. It's a little chilly up in northern China where they're concerned about getting the crops underway, but they've had some timely rains and some milder weather in central and south China along the Yangtze, and I think things are getting underway there pretty well.
All right, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
That's Pete Labatt, agricultural meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. Stay with us if you can for the farming world. For the rest of you, we'll say goodbye for the afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programming comes from the Westchester Group, an agricultural asset management firm specializing in land auctions for farmland, timberland, and recreational land. More information on upcoming auctions is at westchester-auctions.com or at 800-607-6888.
This is the Farming World News and Interviews from the Land Grant in Urbana-Champaign. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Today we'll talk with Tom Doerr. He's the president and CEO of the U.S. Grains Council. Yesterday afternoon, the council had a press conference as it related to exports and China. Mr. Doerr, thank you so much for joining us. Please, might you begin by giving us a little background?
Well, I'm not sure in terms of what background you want, but obviously the council has been involved in market development efforts in China for some time, and recently we had the opportunity to visit with a number of Chinese authorities, both in the trading companies as well as with the state, and it became apparent that the growth in the Chinese economy and the increased demand for high quality proteins, in conjunction with a short crop that they experienced last year due to drought in the south and southwest, and I think some legitimate concerns for the cool wet weather that they're having at the start of this season, has caused them to reconsider whether or not they needed to import corn. We had some sense that that was probably going to happen, but obviously the Chinese are very clever and, like any good marketers, focused on trying to execute a trade in a way that makes them or costs them the least amount of money. About 2 weeks ago, there was an announcement that two cargoes of corn had been purchased by a couple of feed mills. At the time, we felt there was a good possibility that they would be announcing another 6 to 8 cargoes in the near future. Obviously, it took over 2 weeks for that announcement to come, but the most encouraging part was the fact that the announcement that occurred late Tuesday afternoon about those 6 cargoes reflected the fact that it was the state-owned trading company, COFCO, that bought the corn. And that's significant in the sense that that would suggest that they have cleared it with state authorities, and the likelihood of these cargoes getting offloaded, permits to be offloaded, and getting through the appropriate biotechnology protocols is pretty great. And so then yesterday, we started to receive calls, and it was just easier to have a conference call with anyone that was interested. By the same token, we then did some more checking, and some public sources that we feel are fairly reliable in the Chinese community suggest that perhaps as many as a total of 15 cargoes have been purchased. So to date, we believe that there have been 8 announced. There may be another 7. The encouraging part about all of this is that, as I've already indicated, it is COFCO doing it. This is a market that we've hoped to crack for some time. And quite honestly, we're of the view that this is always going to be somewhat tentative when you initially start doing business with the Chinese, as we remember what happened when we started selling them soybeans. By the same token, we think that there's a greater transparency and a greater level of trust that exists. Sometimes we don't always see it the way we'd like to, but we think in a very general sense, our overall international trade relationships are more transparent, they're more trusting, and consequently the issue of food security versus food self-sufficiency are not quite as stark. In other words, although everyone would like to be food self-sufficient, classic example is a country like Japan, who is about 40% self-sufficient, but quite frankly is food secure because in the context of their relationships and their trade relationships with the United States, if you go back to 2008, we've never closed the market on them. They could access anything they wanted when they wanted at the same price that everybody else in the world accessed it. And we think those sorts of things reflected pretty solidly on trading relationships with the United States, and we hope over time that that same level of trust begins to emerge in our relationship with the Chinese, and we would think that it may, given what they're doing with soybeans, et cetera. And so we're hopeful that as you look down the road, this portends a longer, more sustainable trade relationship in the area of grain. The other aspect of all of this is the fact that the Chinese economy, as we all know, has grown and grown quite substantively. And consequently, they are having this increased demand by their growing middle class for better and higher quality protein products, meat, milk, and eggs. And so we don't see anything to suggest that that growth in demand would abate anytime in the near future. And as a result, we think that there is potential for this demand to continue because they do have 1.3 or 1.4 billion people, and there are some constrictions on their ability to produce, and so we're encouraged.
At this point, how large is a cargo load of grain?
A cargo, depending on if it's, there are a lot of terms that they use, but a Panamax is usually a 50 or 55,000 ton cargo. I think maybe it might even at times range up to 60,000 tons. But I think usually they categorize them as around 55,000 tons.
55,000 tons, so
right.
Let's see.
Well, if 40, you've got 40 bushels of corn to a metric ton. So if you had 100,000 tons, you've essentially got 4 million bushels. If you have 15 cargoes at 50,000 tons per cargo, that's 750,000 tons. And that would be 750,000 tons, and that would be 30 million bushels.
This is a start.
Yes.
It doesn't change the balance sheets in the United States a lot. Do you think that they will continue to purchase? Will they need to continue to purchase over the next several months, at least until they get to their harvest season, which at this point looks like it will be later than usual?
Yeah, we don't know. I think the best thing that we can do is reflect on the policies that they implemented when they decided to begin buying soybeans. Now, clearly they made a fundamental decision that they were going to import protein and that they already had the capacity to produce energy crops, corn, unlike many of our other customers in that part of the world that just didn't have the ability to produce corn. But the interesting thing I think that one needs to bear in mind is that they have made a decision to go to a corn-soy ration within their livestock and dairy and poultry operations. And last year, if they raised 130 million metric tons, 135, they raised something in the neighborhood of 5 billion bushels worth of corn for a population of 1.3 billion. If you reflect on the fact that the United States this year, it's estimated that we'll use about 4.7 billion bushels of our corn for livestock feed production, dairy, poultry, et cetera, it gives you some sense of the scope of the potential demand that exists in the Chinese environment.
Yeah, the size of their population in terms of the middle class is roughly about the same size as the United States, if I remember correctly,
right,
in terms of population. So you could measure that out pretty quickly, that if that population in the middle class is eating red meat at a slower pace, but a catching up pace, that they're going to need proteins.
Right. I mean, right now they consume about 2.5 kilograms of dairy products a year, per capita, as opposed to our 85, I believe, is the number that I've seen used most regularly. They consume about 8.5 kilograms of beef, as opposed to whatever ours is. That'd be 8.5 kilograms. It'd be something in the neighborhood of 20 pounds, and we're something in the neighborhood of what, I think 70 or 80 pounds of beef. So as their middle class expands, which it clearly is going to, it's pretty evident that the demand for, you know, an egg a day and more increase in dairy products and other things is got a lot of potential, particularly if they're doing it with corn, soybean rations. And, you know, this year we could produce, if you know, people are already talking about the potential of a 14 billion bushel corn crop, given the early planting and everything else. Now, I know right now we're going through some cooler, damper, wetter weather, but, you know, an extra billion bushels is another 40 million metric tons, or excuse me, about 30 million metric tons. And if the Chinese would happen to step in and take seven, they are already have issued 7.2 million tons. The state has issued 7.2 million metric tons of trade rated quotas, which means that the state trading companies and the private companies can buy up to 7 million metric tons of corn without necessarily having to pay any import duties. There's a bunch of other things that complicate it, but if they would happen to take 7 million metric tons, and I'm not suggesting that to be the case, we've still got a long way to go to get there, but with what we think we're going to increase our production by here in the United States, that's something that's very doable. And so this is a great opportunity, and yet I've been in this business both as a farmer and in the policy arena long enough to know that every time you create a new demand, a new challenge for the U.S. corn farmer, particularly our colleagues in places like Illinois and Iowa, they always rise up to meet the challenge. And I think it's a great opportunity, but I also am not naive enough to think that we can't meet the challenge.
They have a corn landmass that's not quite as large as ours, generally speaking. I think they're around 70 million acres
right
at this point. But they're behind us. I don't know about technologically. I think they're coming up, actually, fairly quickly because the DuPonts, Pioneers, Monsantos of the world are there. Mechanically, of course, they're behind us. Do you think that they'll be able to bring their corn production up to par fairly quickly now? I mean, there should be pressure, certainly, with the finances
well,
to make
I think
that happen.
I think the real challenge that you have is land tenure, land ownership, and how they address those issues. And they're starting several years ago, they began to refocus on that, I think, in a fairly constructive way. But when you have lots of farms that are sizes of, you know, half an acre to 2 or 4 acres, and there are some pretty sizable tracts of land in the Northeast and the really good corn areas, but you still have very large majority of the acreage that are in these small tracts.
You're listening to The Farming World from Illinois Public Media at the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. We're talking this afternoon with Tom Doerr, the president and CEO of the U.S. Grains Council. More with him when we return.
It's National Apple Pie Day. Apples are thought to originate in Asia, where its wild ancestor is still found today. Apples were brought to North America with the colonists in the 1600s, and the first apple orchard in the New World was said to be near Boston in 1625. On this day in agricultural history in 1878, Joseph Henry died. One of the first great American scientists, Henry was the first director of the Smithsonian Institution, where he established the foundation of a National Weather Service. In 1884, Cyrus Hall McCormick died. He is generally credited with the development of the mechanical reaper. His father had worked unsuccessfully between 1809 and 1816 to develop a reaping machine. He followed his father's lead and by 1831 was able to publicly demonstrate a functional machine able to cut a 4-foot swath. In 1834, he patented his design. To defend his patent against a competitor, in 1843, a widely publicized competition was held between their rival products, in which McCormick's machine was judged the better. He sold 29 harvesters that year, 50 the next, and by 1848, he was in business with a factory in Chicago, Illinois, able to produce 500 machines. With production line assembly within a few years, McCormick dominated the market. And in 1958, Velcro was trademarked. The hook loop fastener was invented in 1945. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to The Farming World from Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We continue now our conversation with Tom Doerr, President and CEO of the U.S. Grains Council. Mr. Doerr, when we last spoke, we had just taken up the topic of mechanization in China and a bit on property rights. Can you tell us more?
The Chinese officials that I've dealt with over the past several years appreciate the challenge of that issue. They appreciate the fact that real estate is, as one gentleman told me, one Chinese deputy director of the agricultural ministry told me one day. He said, "We know that that money is the mother of all wealth, or that cash is the mother of all wealth, or that property is the father of all wealth." They understand that. They get it. And they're trying to deal with that. And when they get that issue resolved, it will be much, much less complicated for them to then ratchet up their greater use of technology and
mechanization.
Put together large, yeah, exactly.
And size of properties, because
right.
A half-acre farm is still worked by hand, no doubt.
Right. But there's some really interesting things going on where you have some, I think last year, something in the neighborhood of 7 to 10% of the corn crop was harvested mechanically, which is a pretty substantive step. And a lot of that is being done with self-propelled corn pickers. They still would prefer to harvest their corn in the ear because of their warehousing and storage systems. And as a result, there apparently, and I have not seen them, but I've heard about them, there are a number of 4 and 5 row self-propelled corn pickers that are operated by custom harvesters, and they're developed by U.S. machinery companies who use their latest snout and gathering chain and snapping roller technology that they've implemented and embedded in some of their 1960s and early 70s or 1960s technology, and they slap a diesel engine in a cab in it, and away they go. And as you get those sorts of things going, you know, picking corn by hand is not fun, and it doesn't take long to figure that out. And when they see that, they'll appreciate it.
I can remember a buckboard, but I never had to do it.
So. That's right. Well, I've never had to do it either, but I can tell you I wouldn't want to either.
I don't know what kind of land rights they have at the moment or whether they're able to sell and buy property or not. That usually stifles a lot of capitalism.
The 11th Annual Five-Year Planning Committee, which I believe was in 2007 or maybe 2006, made very substantive changes to what they call the new farm cooperative law. And essentially what they did, as opposed to the old collectives, they made it possible for farmers to voluntarily join and become members of a co-op. The co-ops were given limited liability protection. There was transparency provided, and there was liquidity provided. And so, consequently, they have dramatically opened up the potential to begin creating a transparent and transferable level of property rights. They don't own the real estate, but they have access to it as a production or property use right for a substantial period of time that has now become transferable. So those sorts of things are now becoming more and more. I mean, I met with folks who own a dairy in China, and they had 3,300 dairy Holstein cows producing milk. They were crossing some of them with Jerseys. Their production levels were 11,000 kilos a year. So they weren't short on production technology. What they were really most interested and excited about was talking about how to facilitate a transition in land use and control rights so that they could start bringing in corn silage other than the way they did it last year. And this is stunning. They harvested or they stockpiled 30,000 tons of corn silage last year at this particular dairy. It was harvested by hand, it was chopped by hand, and it was delivered in 10,000 three-ton pickup loads.
It wasn't very energy efficient on the final shot, but the rest of it wasn't too bad.
No, wow. That's right. It was all hand labor, and the only thing that required much of any energy was the gasoline to drive the pickup to the forage storage area, and then whatever they put in the bulldozer to push it up in a pile. Anyway, it is. It's an exciting area. We've just been able to hire a new country director to replace one who rotated out to another opportunity. We think he's a great candidate and a great fit, and the council started in working in China way back in the 80s. There were times, I think, when people thought that we were wasting our time, but if you look at the amount of soybeans that are sold in China today, and if we can begin to establish the kind of trusting relationship that we've developed in places like Japan and Korea and Taiwan that result in essentially developing a food security policy for the country predicated on these transparent and trustful relationships, I think there's some great opportunities for us.
Mr. Doerr, thank you so much for joining us
today. You're welcome. You bet.
Tom Doerr is president and CEO of the U.S. Grains Council. You've been listening to The Farming World from Illinois Public Media. Dave Dickey books the show. I'm your host, University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, wishing you a good day.